Day 12, North Ferriby to Helmsley.
I grew up here in Ferriby, and it was a small world then. We occasionally went to Hull to the pictures, but we'd only been to York once. One sunny Whitsun bank holiday, circa 1968, we drove up to see a butcher's shop that Dad was thinking of buying. It was quite an expedition. Mum packed the car with blankets, sandwiches, fizzy pop, a flask, barley sugars and ice spy books, and Dad brought tools and spares. We looked at the shop, but he decided it wasn't for him. So we had a picnic, me and my brother rolled down the grassy banks of Clifford's Tower, and we went back home. In my mind, therefore, York was a long way from my parents' house, where I'd just been staying over the weekend at my trip's halfway point. So today I set off at dawn, calorie loaded with bacon, sausage and eggs, hoping to be there by lunch. I actually arrived in good time for another breakfast, before the boutiques in the shambles had opened and just as the market stalls were setting up. Of course, York's not that far from Ferriby on a bike. Less than 40 miles. A pleasurable 3 and a bit hours of flat cycling on empty back lanes. Suddenly, I had to recalibrate my childhood projection of the world. As for that second breakfast, it was a carrot. I spent several hours looking round York. It's a hell of a town. I gawped at the majesty of the Minster inside and out. I walked round the medieval city walls, which date all the way back to Victorian times.
With my lovely blue streamlined engine Mallard, we drew away from Grantham.
And I admired Mallard in the National Railway Museum and sniggered quietly at the scruffy, middle-aged, lone white men getting all excited about trains. Then I realised I was one of them.
125. 126. That was the fastest speed of steam locomotive I'd ever been driven in the world.
And I had lunch. Inconveniently for the local food theme of the trip, York didn't seem big on regionally sourced cuisine. I had to make do with a Yorkshire pudding at the Star Inn. It was the size of a dustbin lid, filled with Yorkshire ham, peas, carrots, spuds that were school dinner salty, and submerged in an ocean of gravy. It was great. Hydration is important when cycling, so I had a pint of Theakston's Old Peculiar, brewed up in Masham. It was a decent pint, sweet, caramel chocolatey, a bit watery and fizzy poppish, maybe.
Star rating, middle luminosity brown dwarf, spectral peculiarities.
With plenty of daylight left, I headed out north, deciding not to roll down the grassy banks of Clifford's Tower in tribute to 30 years before. Somewhere along the line, I picnicked on the genuine Yorkshire curd cheesecake that I'd picked up from a shop in Gillygate, which they said was made up the road. Perhaps this was the road. It was very good, despite being yesterday's bake at half price, sweet cheese like mascarpone, gently gritty and unobtrusive currants, and decent pastry that didn't flake dryly like the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yesterday rating, all my troubles seemed so far away.
Helmsley, a market town with a fine square on the southern edge of the North York Moors, provided my hostel home for the night. I fancied a nice quiet beer in the Feathers pub. It had been the scene of a possible knifing incident earlier in the evening, apparently. The staff mentioned this quite nonchalantly, as if the ensuing spilled pint and sodden beer mat was of more consequence. Mindful of sample sizes in my research, I had two more pints of Old Peculiar. This was much better than the previous iteration, less chocolatey but less fizzy, still a full body but more rich back-of-the-mouth aftertaste.
Feathers rating, double peacock.
Miles today, 64. Miles since Land's End, 640. Day 13, Helmsley to Durham.
A big hostel breakfast this morning, with all ingredients local. Except for the grapefruit. Cereal. Butter. Toast. Jam and milk. The water was regionally sourced, though. And the tea was Taylor's of Yorkshire, grown, presumably, on the lofty plantations of Dolby Forest.
I drink Yorkshire tea nowadays.
Yorkshire tea, like tea used to be.
The road north from Helmsley took me up into the clouds and through the fabulous North York Moors. When, eventually, I dropped back down out of them, it was exhilarating, like a plane coming down to land at Gatwick. I headed along towards the ornate spires and Gothic towers of Middlesbrough. OK then, factory chimneys and smokestacks. Everything was fresh, the smell, the view, the freedom. except for my shoes, which, after nearly 2 weeks of heavy rain, were getting rather aromatic. In Yarm, a friendly, broad-laned market town that reminded me of Beverley, I had a splendid coffee and homemade strawberry tart.
Tart. Rating. Donna.
Country lanes took me to Ferryhill, heading for Durham, whose cathedral spire loomed out of the mist. My barbag stereo was playing Roger Whittaker's Durham Town, a poignant story of loss and of geographical confusion. In the lyrics, Whittaker, who was born in Kenya of English parents, places the city not on the Weir, but 20 miles away, on the River Tyne. Plus, he rhymes Tyne with time, which is a bit rubbish anyway. Weir would have been much better. He could have rhymed it with beer. Anyway, I sat out yet another rainstorm with some excellent local fish and chips in Bob's Fish Bar and a feeling of déjà vu. A welcoming Mrs. Bob let me sit inside in the dry to eat them. On learning of my trip and its local food theme, Bob gave me a free can of Coke, which was sort of local, assuming the steel had been forged in Middlesbrough.
Deep fry rating, batter my fish, three-person god.
It was still pouring when I'd eaten up, though, so I had to slosh through deep puddles and intense rain to Durham. I went into the tourist info to find some accommodation just before it closed at four, but my heart sank as deeply and damply as my tyres had done in the endless standing water on the way here. "I'm sorry," the assistant was telling a few disappointed waiting couples. "There's no rooms left in Durham tonight. You'll have to drive to Newcastle." There was no way I wanted to cycle another 20 miles now. I was wet through, freezing cold and dog-tired. With the driving couples dismissed, though, things took a U-turn for the better. "You're soaking. Sit down and dry out for a minute," the nice lady assistant said. "No," I replied, "I'd better get cycling. I heard you say Durham had got no rooms left, so..." "Cycling?" she said. And I told her about my trip, how I'd raised a grand for asthma research, which was true, and how I was eating only local food, which was mostly true, and how everyone had been so helpful and friendly, which had got truer the more north I'd got. "Wait there a minute," she said, and made a phone call. "Margaret, it's Jean. Hello." "Oh, yes, fine. Now, I've got a young man here. He's cycling Land's End to John O'Groats and he's raising money for asthma research." "Well, I know I thought of your Kayley, and he's looking for somewhere to stay tonight, but the B&Bs are all full, and I thought maybe..." "Yes. Yes. Yes, I'll ask him. Is £15 all right?" All right? Of course it was all right. What a star! She'd obviously rung up one of her special reserve options, a friend who did accommodation occasionally, for deserving cases only. So, I had a lovely, cosy, chirpy family B&B just round the corner, with a supper and a big breakfast thrown in, and a comfy bed with teddy bear, in Kayley's brother's old room, now they were both at college. Ever since then, anyone speaking with a Durham accent can do no wrong by me. Happy, showered and dry, I strolled the centre of Durham, and sat for half an hour just admiring the cathedral and the grand close, the castle, the park and the river. That's the River Weir, Roger. I picnicked on a stotty. This, tourist info had assured me, was a local speciality. A bread cake the size of a vinyl LP. A local bakery had filled it for me with local ham and salad, but it was rather bland. Sadly, they were out of Durham mustard, which was either a local delicacy or yet another unsettling euphemism.
Ham rating, Keanu Reeves.
The evening's beer quest turned out all right. First up was a pint of not-quite-local Sam Smith's Old Brewery Bitter from Tadcaster in the Swan and Three Signets. Rich, oaky taste, silken texture.
Swan rating, no match for this.
Next was Newcastle Exhibition Ale in the Market Tavern. A slightly odd taste of cream soda on an otherwise smooth and tasty medium beer.
Market rating, Boots Ale.
Finally, Castle Eden Ale at the Brewer and Firkin, brewed just 20 minutes away. Notes of barley sugar, slightly hoppy, very refreshing. A good dessert beer.
Eden rating, fruitful.
Miles today, 54. Miles since Land's End, 694. Day 14, Durham to Amble.
A little groggy from another big but tasty cooked breakfast of debatable local provenance, I headed for Stanley. I eventually found the Durham to Stanley railway path and made good progress, listening to Mozart's late symphonies on my barbag disco. I realised the path was actually going to another place called Stanley. A different, wrong Stanley.
Here's another nice mess you've gotten me into.
What do you mean, I got you into?
But we cycle tourists know how to turn things round, don't we? Literally, when you realise you've been going the opposite direction to the one intended, but metaphorically too. And I turned the negative into a positive. Because I saw on the map that I was only 3 miles from Waterhouses, where some long-time family friends, Mike and Janice, had a farm. So I dropped in to see them. They were delighted and rather surprised to see me turning up unannounced on my bike, looking 10 years older than when they last saw me, which was 2 years ago. We had a lovely catch-up over a cup of tea before Janice had to take some sheep to market. Hilly backcountry roads let me avoid the A1 and took me through yet more drizzle to the metro centre. I had a snack lunch and looked wide-eyed at its retail vastness. Over 200 shops, including 3 hairdressers. Wow, it's clearly so big you need a haircut just walking from one side to the other.
Customers are reminded that bicycles are not permitted inside the metro centre. They are dirty and dangerous. Smoking is fine though. Thank you.
Shopping centres are not my natural habitat. I wondered what on earth I was doing here. Of course, the metro centre would have had the answer for that too, because one of the services they provide is a resident chaplain. The King James Bible is a spiritual guide for many people. I couldn't find much in it about cycling, though.
And take the helmet of salvation, which is the word of God.
Ephesians chapter 6, verse 17.
And whatsoever saddle he rideth upon, that hath the issue, shall be unclean.
Leviticus chapter 15, verse 9.
As for the wheels, it was cried unto them in my hearing, O wheel.
Ezekiel chapter 10, verse 13. I worked my way through Newcastle and, thinking of my local food theme, paid a visit to the Make Me Rich cheese farm. Very clever name. They were politely impressed by my trip concept and gave me a free jar of goat's cheese as a token of appreciation. I bought plenty too, of course, for picnicking later on. Their Northumberland original cheese was a deliciously buttery, non-claggy, gentle, rich, good everyday cheese. Light on its feet, but showing great skill.
Stanley rating, Matthews.
Elsdon goat was surprisingly non-goaty, chalky, bit crumbly, like strong cottage cheese. Unusual, powerful, perfectionist.
Stanley rating, Kubrick.
A long level ride with a friendly tailwind and, very unusually, rain-free skies got me to Amble, where I got a B&B overlooking the harbour. It felt a slightly odd place, lots of youths hanging around in a forlorn rather than menacing way, more downtrodden Scottish island port than Northumbrian mainline station staging post. I had a night off the beer, watched Yes Prime Minister on my room's telly and slept triumphantly.
Miles today, 64. Miles since Land's End, 758. Day 15, Amble to Coldstream.
I spent today riding through Northumberland. The region has its own bagpipes tradition, a distinctive instrument playing a distinctive style, and that tells you something, that it might seem like Scotland, but in fact, it has its own identity. It also has a lot of castles, a legacy of border wars in the 14th to the 16th centuries, 4 of which I rode past today. First up, shortly after breakfast in Amble, was Warkworth's dramatic hilltop remains, followed by Alnwick's majestic castle. I headed up the coast, and with a salty tang of sea air in my nostrils, I took a short detour to Craster Harbour, mindful of my local food theme. Because Craster is the home of the smoked kipper. They've been making them in the traditional way here for hundreds of years, and local producers, the Robson family, let me watch them at work, hanging up the split fish in the smokehouse and getting the wood fires going. If this smokehouse could talk, what tales it could tell. Except it wouldn't be able to for coughing. I bought a couple to put in my panniers for later use. They were pungent, oily, rich and powerfully aromatic. Curiously, for the rest of the day, passing traffic gave me plenty of room.
Smoke rating, emission accomplished.
I walked my bike along the coast path to my third castle of the day at Dunstanborough, and then cycled on to the harbour town of Sea Houses for more regional seafood. A small stotty, small being only the size of a frisbee, filled with fresh local crab. It was deliciously sweet and tasted invitingly of sea bottom rather than freezer bottom.
Crab rating, sideways compliment.
I had another local delicacy, a border slice. This was a tartan-coloured fruit and coconut cake covered with icing that was a lot more pleasant and less sickly than it sounded or looked.
Border rating, Poland, Ukraine.
I fancied riding across the causeway to Holy Island, further up the coast, but the tide wouldn't allow that until early evening. So I decided to spend the afternoon on a rather choppy boat trip from Sea Houses out to the Farne Islands to see puffins, razorbills and guillemots, but also to retrace the much choppier route taken by one of Northumberland's most famous daughters, Grace Darling. In 1838, young Grace was living just off the coast here with her lighthouse keeper father. One stormy evening, a passenger steamship, the SS Forfarshire, got into difficulties and broke up on a nearby reef. Grace spotted the incident and helped her father row out in treacherous seas to rescue 9 of the survivors. Her bravery earned her instant international fame, which she didn't enjoy at all. She had to pose for portraits and sculptures. Strangers would turn up at the lighthouse demanding to meet her. The press wouldn't leave her alone, and she narrowly escaped being tricked into making PR appearances in a rather trashy circus. She was celebrated in countless gushing songs, books and newspaper articles, and even a verse by the worst poet in the world, Scotland's William Montgomery.
Before she died, scores of suitors in marriage sought her hand, but no, she'd rather live in Longstone Lighthouse on Farne Island, and there she lived and died with her father and mother, and for her equal in true heroism, we cannot find another. Ocaiza Nu.
4 years later, Grace died of TB, aged just 26. Back on land, I phoned a friend of a friend. Tom was a cyclist who lived in Coldstream, and he invited me to stay. So, I ditched the Holy Island idea and pedalled inland to his place, past my fourth castle of the day at Bamborough. It was further than I expected. There was a rainstorm en route, and I was delayed by traffic jams, which consisted of flocks of sheep. But I found his house in the town's main square, half expecting to have to dodge a band of guards practising some brass standards. Tom couldn't stay up late. He was a postie, that traditional role for gentle, thoughtful souls to earn money by cycling, and had to be up at 4 the next morning. However, his friend Caroline was staying. I thought there was something vaguely familiar about her, and it turned out she'd visited my college 16 years earlier to see a school friend. I'd probably met her then. We chatted over a bottle of wine. And another. And another. By the time we were clearing up and going to bed, Tom was up, in the shower, and getting ready for work.
Miles today, 56. Miles since Land's End, 814. Day 16, Coldstream to Dunfermline.
It's a wonderful feeling when you wake refreshed after a fine night's sleep in a comfy bed. As I now knew to my cost, having dozed fitfully on a lumpy sofa for 3 hours after a skinful of cheap red wine in my friend Tom's house. I was lifted a bit, though, by yesterday's Craster kippers for breakfast, tangy, oily and with a bracing smack of the North Sea about them. I headed north out of Coldstream into some lovely sunshine that accompanied me through the rolling hills to the town of Duns, Soon, I was on high, dramatic moorland, the Lammermuir Hills, the Walter Scott-esque setting of Donizetti's 1835 opera Lucia di Lammermoor, an everyday story of family feuds, wedding fiascos, fistfights and deaths. Like many a 19th century opera, it's basically the Jeremy Kyle show plus bel canto. The work is famous for the heroine's mad scene, when Lucia loses it in Act 3, Scene 2. I felt the same when my bike was nicked from outside Pizza Express in Twickenham. But today, I was having a good day. I had lunch al fresco at Whiteadder Reservoir, with a picnic table and the green upland scenery all to myself. Yesterday's stop at Craster provided the rolled baked herring, fully rounded and fishy, and a rather good hangover cure.
Rolls rating, master of air.
I also had some Lockerbie mature cheddar, rich and orange-coloured.
Orange rating, William.
My stotty from Dunn's, though, was a bit disappointing. Dry and powdery on the inside, stale on the outside, and felt older than it really was.
Dunn rating, Clive.
Once over the summit, the views towards Edinburgh suddenly opened out. I got a great 180-degree vista of the Firth of Forth, and then enjoyed a long downhill into the city, during which it started to throw it down with rain again, as it has for most of the trip. The early evening Royal Mile was grey and dripping wet. Tourist Info had a long, chaotic queue of tourists looking for accommodation with louder voices and sharper elbows than mine.
Excuse me, there's a queue.
I don't care if there is a line. I need a hotel room.
There seemed little point staying here tonight anyway. I wouldn't have time for worthwhile sightseeing tonight or tomorrow morning. So I carried on. Some city streets and rail trails got me to the exhilarating crossing of the Forth Bridge. Thanks to the pedestrian cycle path, I could stop halfway to admire the churning waters below. Briefly, anyway, before my long-suffering stomach started churning in sympathy. But I felt liberated and happy as I scooted across down the other side of the bridge onto the northern side of the estuary into Dunfermline and what felt like a new chapter. I found a B&B opposite the Abbot's house and rustled up some dinner in their kitchen before a welcome, quiet, early night. I still had cubes of goat's cheese left over from Make Me Rich 2 days ago, and following their suggestion, I tipped them over a salad. The cheese added bulk and taste to the leaves, while the oil served as an instant dressing. A decent local stotty accompanied it. For pudding, I had a singing hinny, a local speciality that appeared to be a large flat scone. I had it warm with butter, and it did that sconny thing of lining my teeth with fur.
Singing rating, shrill, piercing, no tone colour.
Miles today, 71. Miles since Land's End, 885. Day 17, Dunfermline to Pitlochry.
It was the solstice today, the longest day of the year. It certainly felt like the longest day of the year. It was another long, long slog through horrible weather, driving rain, headwinds and spray from passing lorries on the A9. I spent most of the day feeling angry, cold and very wet. I wasn't singing in the rain, more like swearing in the rain. In fact, it was so bad I didn't take any pictures at all, as my camera wasn't rated for underwater use. Breakfast was a Selkirk bannock, described as a rich and buttery leavened tea bread. In other words, a cotton wool cake the size of a car wheel with too many currants that could serve as ballast for a submarine.
Selkirk rating, Alexander.
In Kinross, I had a good strong coffee and pancake, or possibly crumpet, depending on whether you believed the menu or the bill. I couldn't tell which. And then it was back to riding through more torrential rain.
In Perth, I tried to dry my clothes in a laundrette, but was told I couldn't put them in the tumble dryer without washing them first because of health and safety.
I didn't have time for that, so, after leaving a few puddles behind me, I moved on. I passed a television shop window. It was showing the Ashes test. I just saw one ball as I cycled past. England lost a wicket. Lunch at a bakery cafe was Stovey's, another local speciality for my theme. This was a school dinnerish plateful of diced boiled potatoes, slightly mashed round the edges, plus onions and chunks of meat, accompanied by two oatmeal cakes. It was a bit stodgy, but good filling stuff for a cold, wet cyclist on a cold, wet day.
Stove rating, Betty.
I carried on through the rain up the A9. I was making some progress now that the wind had dropped, but then so had my spirits. Talking of spirits, at Pitlochry, I dropped into Bell's Distillery, thinking that I'd have a look round. But the bloke in a kilt at reception had some bad news.
I'm sorry, you're too late for the tour.
I told him I was cycling Land's End to John O'Groats. Then came the standard joke that I'm getting a little bit tired of hearing.
Why don't you go by car? Ha, 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 ha.
But then came the good news.
Can I offer you some free whiskey instead?
He gave me a couple of drams of the rather excellent 12-year-old Blair Athol to warm me up.
Bell's rating, Bob Major.
I found a B&B in Pitlochry, thawed out in the shower, and got dry for the first time in 9 hours. Dinner was haggis, neeps and tatties from a place calling itself a Scottish bistro. The veg was slightly mushy, but the haggis was rich and darkly spicy and would have graced any incomprehensible Burns poem.
Robert Burns rating, Old Scotland wants nae skinking ware, that jalps in luggies. Whatever that means.
My dog's just eaten some haggis.
How does he smell?
Awful.
I finished the evening off with a pint of 80 shilling of a forgotten brand in a forgotten pub. I thought it tasted of whiskey a bit, though that may have been wishful thinking.
Shilling rating, 8 pence 3 farthings.
I'm still being followed everywhere by Radiohead's paranoid android. Today, particularly, it was the final slow chorale that I kept hearing from passing car radios in laundrettes and cafes and on the pub jukebox tonight. Only now did I realise how relevant the lyrics were. Rain down from a great height. John O'Groats is now about 4 days away. It can't rain on all of those days, can it?
Miles today, 58. Miles since Land's End, 943. Day 18, Pitlochry to Aviemore.
Today, yet again, was miserable. All headwinds and rain. The A9 was my travelling companion today. The sort of travelling companion you really don't want. The sort that sits between you and the aisle on the train and talks incessantly about immigrants or young people today or how awful their first spouse was and how you look just like them. And then you find out they're going to the same place as you and you'll be stuck with them for 5 hours. Anyway, I pedalled and pedalled, but the scenery didn't change. Big, far-off mountains stayed big and far off, and I never seemed to make any progress. Half the time, I was sharing the road with fast traffic. The other half, I was following the untrafficked old road, often signed as a cycle path, but to get on it or off it, I had to vault barriers.
Music theory approaching. Warning. Music.
With nothing to see in the drizzle and the mist, I had to entertain myself in my head all day. Echoing through it was the Eurythmics' Here Comes the Rain Again, which, coincidentally, starts off with a splashy guitar chord of A9, the same as the road. Splashy, I mean. Now, proper musicians might be getting a bit irritated and cross when I say Here Comes the Rain Again starts on an A9 chord.
I'm a proper musician. I'm a bit irritated and cross.
Because the background harmony is all A minor. It's only that guitar chord that's marked as A9 on many scores, and it doesn't have a third in it. The clear harmony of the song implies an A minor ninth chord, which sounds like this. As opposed to a proper A ninth chord, a dominant major ninth, in other words, which sounds like this. I tried to think of other songs that might start on or feature a chord of A9 in honour of the road. I didn't get very far very quickly though, just like my cycling progress. Maybe The Pretender's Brass in Pocket. That sort of starts with an A9. Or maybe there were other roads that shared their name with chords. The A6 of a Chapfell, for example. Or the E6 that goes to the Arctic Circle. Or the B7 highway that goes right across the middle of Germany. Or the D11 motorway in the Czech Republic. Or the C13... As you can see, staying sane was a bit of a challenge today. At King Ussi, I visited the Highland Folk Museum, really just to get out of the rain. Once past the ticket office, I realised it was an outdoor museum. Back on the A9...
Thank you.
I found a new way to occupy myself in this endless tedium. As each motorbike or lorry overtook me with yet another close pass, I mentally calculated their speed, relative to mine, from the Doppler effect, the drop-in pitch of their engine or horn as they went past. You can do this with a bit of A-level physics and basic music theory.
Warning. Mathematics approaching. Warning. Mathematics approaching.
If the musical interval of the two notes is P, expressed as a fraction, then P minus 1 divided by P plus 1 gives you the fraction of the speed of sound that the vehicle was doing. For example, if the pitch drop is a minor third, that happens to be a ratio of 6 over 5. So P is 6 over 5, or 1 and a fifth, and P minus 1 divided by P plus 1 works out as 1 11th. So the vehicle is passing at 1 11th the speed of sound relative to you. That's 1 11th of 770 miles an hour, which is 70 miles an hour. So if you're cycling at the speed I was doing in this headwind, which was about 5 miles an hour, then you know the overtaking vehicle was doing 70 plus 5, or 75 miles an hour. Officer. Making all this rather complicated is that musical intervals are named in a silly and confusing way. In maths, if you add a fifth and a third, you get 8/15. In music, if you add a fifth and a third, you get a seventh. More hours of boredom, rain, and frankly unpodcastable thoughts got me at last to Aviemore and the youth hostel. I celebrated breaking the 1,000-mile barrier for the trip with a local half-priced chip shop special. White pudding, deep-fried haggis and chips, all for £1.35. Now that was music to my ears.
Chord rating, F-sharp minor 7th, flat 5, add 13. Yummy.
Miles today, 58. Miles since Land's End, 1001.
Good, occasionally poor. Cromarty, southwesterly 5 to 7, backing east-westerly by north, perhaps gale 9 later, but who knows. Rough, occasionally very rough, get those sick bags ready. Showers then rain, then more rain, then really heavy rain. Fourth. Awful. Rain, wind, storms. And this is supposed to be summer. Look, if you're cycle touring near the coast, just take a day off. Stay inside in the warm. Have porridge and haggis and whiskey.
Day 19, Aviemore to Invergordon.
I was getting fed up of the weather. I had another dreary morning haul through yet more freezing cold rain and gusty winds. In the Scottish version of Vivaldi's Four Seasons, they could just play winter four times over. I dragged myself up and over Slocht Summit, not that I could tell in the thick cloud of mist. In the village of Tomatin, that's it, there was a distillery, and I escaped the rain for an hour by doing a tour, as more research for my local speciality theme. The tour had been shortened, they said, because of the recent drought. This was hard to believe. Drought? It had been pouring with rain for the last 3 weeks. But while our friendly guide Helen did curtail the description of malting and cask making and retorts and so on, she retained the full dram tasting programme, so we were all happy. On hearing of my cycle trip, she also gave me a free pair of miniatures of 10-year-old single malts to celebrate with when I reached John O'Groats.
I just found out my wife is making illegal whiskey, but I love her still.
I struggled on to a sodden Inverness. I was here to explore my Scottish heritage. I'm sort of half English, half Scottish. My mother's lot, the Robertsons, came to Hull from Wick. Her dad reckoned he was a lost heir to the Robertsons' jam fortune, which seemed unlikely. It was made in Paisley then. But most of our family ancestry is unlikely. In fact, Mum thinks I might also be half Irish. Anyway, I visited Inverness's clan centre, but found nothing relevant to me. It seemed that the Robertsons had had no involvement in clan wars, which was a bit surprising, given what my mother's lot were like. I love Scottish traditional music, especially the pipes, but it seemed I'd also be out of luck at the Balnain Museum of Highland Music. It was closed, with a note on the door saying it would reopen in the summer. Clearly, late June doesn't count as summer up here. Fair enough, I suppose. It was cold and wet and horrible. However, on hearing about my cycle trip, the nice lady in the office called up one of the museum guys. He very kindly came round to open up the museum, just for me, and give me a personal tour. Before I went, I couldn't have told you the difference between Highland and Lowland pipes or a Strathspey from a reel. After the fascinating session with an expert here, being guided through many illuminating musical extracts, I still couldn't. Lunch was overdue, and at a pub called Number 27, I sat out more showers eating a home-cooked special, watching Wimbledon on the telly and enjoying a real ale. The pork and black pudding burgers came from a local butcher, Fraser's, with homemade apple and mustard seed relish and good chunky veg from local farms. Strong, confident, focused.
Wimbledon rating, Martina Navratilova.
The beer was Tomintal Stag. The village of Tomintal was the setting for a notorious fraud that came to light in 1994. A Scottish lord had pumped money into the local economy, revitalising its whisky production. He turned out not to be a lord at all. He was an accountant at Scotland Yard called Tony Williams, who'd bought his title and the distillery with money he'd stolen from a secret police fund. At his trial, he tried to influence the judge with some Masonic signs, but it was no use. He was found guilty and banged up. Anyway, the beer was very nice. Woody and firm, but fresh, like rich pine. Light touch, approachable, in friendly control.
Wimbledon rating, Sue Barker.
I crossed the top of the Great Glen at Keswick Bridge. Now that the wind was dropping and the rain easing up a bit, I could hear birdsong again. And, oh, a clanking from my bottom bracket. Oh no, jeopardy. Would I be thwarted by a mechanical just 100 miles from John O'Groats? I spent the rest of the day fretting about it. I hacked across the Cromarty Firth to Invergordon, where I found a B&B and had another quiet night, just enjoying being warm and dry. The scenery was low, drab and estuarial, in a foggy palette of greys, greens and browns. Very reminiscent of the Humber, in fact. When my mother's family left northwest Scotland for Hull all those years ago, I wondered what their motivation was. I hope it wasn't for a change of scene. They'd have been disappointed. On the other hand, maybe they just couldn't stand another summer here.
Miles today, 63. Miles since Land's End, 1,064. Day 20, Invergordon to Helmsdale.
I had a frustrating morning, waiting in vain. I was cooling my heels, twiddling my thumbs, tapping my toes and drumming my fingers. Who says men can't multitask? I'd given my bike to a monosyllabic mechanic who took all morning to look at my clanky bearings and suck his teeth. Finally, around noon, it was done. I set off, impatient to continue, and found the clanking was worse than ever. A few monosyllables came to my mind too. At Tain, I couldn't find a bike shop, but I did find another distillery. I dropped into Glenmorangie, with its unusually lofty chimney that's said to produce whisky of especially light, airy taste. I tried a nip, and that's indeed how it was. A dry white wine sort of whisky. Very nice too.
Chimney pun rating, serious case of flu.
I picnicked overlooking a loch. It was well into the afternoon, but I had morning rolls, a Scottish local delicacy, and creamy light orange Galloway cheese. And then, something extraordinary happened. The sun came out and stayed out for the first time since Land's End. I crossed some firths and met a 74-year-old Scouser pushing a pram from John O'Groats to Land's End. At last I could enjoy the cycling as I trundled along the sunny coast. It was all green hillsides, blue skies and azure waters that could have been in the Caribbean, except I wouldn't need a fleece and windproof in the Caribbean. I arrived at Helmsdale feeling relaxed. I was so close to John O'Groats now that surely I'd be able to get there tomorrow, even though my bottom bracket was doing an impression of a Cuban percussion section playing in a spoon factory. Another couple of cyclists doing the end-to-end were there too, also relaxed and also cautiously pre-jubilant. We treat ourselves to dinner in the upscale local restaurant and swapped cycling stories. I chose a locally caught oak-smoked salmon. It was delicate, well-textured and delicious.
Salmon pun rating, above par.
It complemented the whisky very well. That was a Klein Lisch from the distillery in Brora, a dozen or so miles away. Quite light, a little smoky. We toasted ourselves for our efforts so far.
Whisky pun rating, for Pete's sake.
It was still bright and sunny when we walked back to the hostel. The first evening I'd had without a roof of black clouds since starting off. I was astonished to see it was past 11 o'clock. The end of my trip was clearly in sight too, and I couldn't wait for tomorrow morning.
Miles today, 46. Miles since Land's End, 1,110. Day 21, Helmsdale to John O'Groats.
Yesterday's sunshine had gone, and today was another long battle against a chilly headwind with blank, grey, Tupperware skies. Riding up and down the Ord of Caithness felt like tracing out a sine wave. I stopped at a farm, run by a friendly couple from Bristol, to admire their livestock. They were llamas, clearly wondering the same thing I was. What on earth am I doing here? At Wick, I stopped for a couple of hours, intent on a locally sourced lunch. In the 1860s, this was the greatest herring port in Britain, possibly the world. But today, I couldn't find any local fish anywhere. I ended up having chicken nuggets and chips in a shabby cafe full of stressed young women with bawling kids. But I'd also come here for family research. My mum's lot, fishing folk, came down from here to the then boom town of Hull in the late 1800s. Perhaps their departure hastened Wick's decline. The Heritage Museum had illuminating displays on the area's way of life then, and huge photographs of street scenes of the time up on the walls. I scrutinised them for faces that might resemble my granddad's. I found about 200. I carried on. After a stop off at Caithness Glass to get out of the wind for half an hour, I'm not much interested in glass unless it's holding some sort of liquid, I plodded the final few miles into the brutal northerly. At around 6:10, I made my final descent to John O'Groats itself. With Glenn Gould's Bach Well-Tempered Clavier playing on my barbag stereo, I saw the Orkneys appear over the blue-grey horizon. Three ladies out walking cheered me home, and I felt euphoric. My life was about to be redefined. Everything I'd done before now, and everything I'd done after. I burst into tears. The finish approached. John O'Groats was as majestic, scenic and thrilling as I'd expected. Not very, in other words. But here I was, at the signpost. I was actually here. I'd made it. I got out my miniature whiskey from Tomatin and toasted myself, feeling as elated as I've ever done in my life. The sun even came out, briefly. I phoned mums and dads and girlfriends and celebrated with a slap-up treat dinner in the John O'Groats House Hotel, With the Wick experience still on my mind and my stomach, I went for the most local thing I could find on the menu, the Scottish seafood platter. Smoked salmon, smoked mackerel, herring, prawns Marie Rose. All local, but how local was a moot point. The ingredients, I was told, had all come via Inverness from Scotland, which was a bit vague.
Net rating, highly strung, several loopholes.
But there was no doubt about the provenance of the gatto afterwards. It came from Shrewsbury. There was no draft Scottish beer available in the hotel, so I had a narrow escape. Instead, I had 3 pints of passable Theakston's before bedding down in the adjacent hostel for a beautiful night's sleep. It had been a journey of over 1,000 miles, 3 weeks, 2 punctures, lots of friends and relatives, awesome scenery, and almost constant rain. I later found out it had been the wettest June for 136 years. As for the food thing, well, it turned out not to be possible to eat and drink locally all the way. Not really. Britain's distribution networks are so efficient that if anything tastes good, it's likely to be available anywhere in the island. But as a way of enhancing my trip, it worked a treat. It meant I didn't just have cheddar and salami for lunch, or chicken and chips in the pub every night. It encouraged me to get talking to people, and to try new things. I ate and drank interestingly every day, even if I often had to compromise a bit on what local meant, and even if I did end up relying rather a lot on cheese and beer. The End-to-End is a challenging rite of passage, a kind of master's degree in cycle touring. It showcases the island's landscapes, people, food and weather, with something new to stop and enjoy around every corner. But it's about life-affirming memories too. Trim villages, with tiny church and pondside tea room. Restless cities, pulsing with sport and music and commerce. The sunny picnic by an ancient packhorse bridge. The shivering chocolate bar refuel as you sit out a downpour in a bus shelter. Sociable evenings in a traditional market square pub. Wild camping solitude by a far-flung lochside. Monuments and buildings recalling major historical events. Quirky museums about pencils or lawnmowers. People giving you directions, sometimes back the way you came, with a friendly joke and in an accent that could be from the local area or from the other side of the world. Riding Land's End to John O'Groats was, out of everything I'd done in my life, the achievement I was most proud of. Until the next big ride, anyway.
Miles today, 57. Miles since Land's End, 1,167. Well done.
Yes, well done. He went rather slowly, though.
I agree. And I didn't often understand the choice of music, either.
Oh, I thought it was quite good, actually. There were a lot of jokes in the music he chose.
Well, they weren't very funny then.
Maybe you just don't have much of a sense of humor.
Oh yes, I have. Here's a joke. What do you call poetry generating software that only produces incomprehensible gibberish? Robot Burns. Ha ha. Ho ho ho. Ha 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 ha.
Ha 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 ha.
Ha 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 ha.